Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Welcome to Pit Pass Moto, the show that brings you interviews with the motorcycle industry insiders and racers that make the sport move. I'm Clint Esposito, along with my co-host, Heather Wilson. What is up, Heather? How are you doing?
I'm good. How are y'all?
I'm doing great. Just about to record with you. It's going to be very exciting.
I know. This is episode 3 for us. I feel like we're finally kind of getting a groove a little bit. So thanks for everybody hanging with us while we get this figured out.
Our production team is making us sound good, so that's why nobody's left yet.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that may be true. I wanted to bring up this topic that I was reading about over the weekend, and I think it's pretty cool. It's not new, but Yamaha Motor Corp has been doing these Yamaha Outdoor Access Initiative. That's kind of a mouthful. They call it OAI. Basically grants to different nonprofits for power sports industry projects. And in 2023, they contributed over $1 million in grant awards, which is their largest annual funding since the program's inception in 2008, which is pretty rad.
Yeah, that is awesome. And I did look through the list a little bit. There's a lot of very interesting, I guess, organizations that I didn't realize that were out there doing these type of things.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different nonprofits, whether they're clubs, whether they're different organizations that are really out there allowing motorcyclists to enjoy the sport, like putting together trails on public lands, fighting for access, just creating a lot of riding opportunities, and even taking a step back before they get into motorcycling, getting kids started on bicycles.
Well, that was one of the programs that I was really interested in, was they had one like that was associated with a school, which I'm like, did no one care that I rode dirt bikes when I was a kid?
Yeah, I feel like there's been a lot more community outreach today than ever before as far as getting kids started in motorcycling. So I know even the Grand National Cross Country Series, the GNCC Series, they will take racers and go into local schools before their events just to talk about, you know, the racing and to come out and watch them race and talk about their careers as racers, which I think is pretty cool. But these programs that won grants from Yamaha, Cycle Kids Inc. and Shredder Education Foundation are really aimed at getting kids started on two wheels, period. So that starts with bicycling before you can even ride a motorcycle.
Well, I was looking at the Shredder Education Foundation and they were talking about, additionally, the Sierra Foundation will provide local fifth and sixth grade students with the opportunity to attend Rich Oliver Mystery School 4-week ride and wrench camp. They're fifth and sixth grade. They're going to teach them how to work on their own motorcycles.
That's pretty cool. That would have been awesome as a kid to like get to go and see that.
It wasn't that cool when my dad was like, if you're going to ride this motorcycle, you need to fix it. And then he walked away and I'm like, what way do the bolts turn? At least give me a little bit of direction, which he did. My dad is a mechanic, so that's even why I work on all my stuff. But yeah, in the beginning, it was definitely a little bit overwhelming. So I guess, you know, the earlier you start kids at least realizing that maintenance is even a thing, I guess, you know, the better.
Yeah. And you were talking about your dad being a mechanic and that's why you work on your stuff. I guess I took the opposite approach because of my
dad. You were
dad.
Like, my dad is a mechanic. I don't need to work on my own stuff.
Exactly.
This wasn't my choice. My dad was like, you're riding it. You're going to fix it. And then that's how that went. So given the opportunity to not have to work on my own stuff at like 9, I would have been all for it.
Yeah, with the Yamaha Outdoor Access Initiative, like I think it's a really cool thing to get involved in. If you aren't familiar with like dealing with public lands or organizations that are out there creating these opportunities for you to ride, to do some research and see how you can join, even if it's just like a one-time, you know, volunteer thing or if it's recurring. But Yamaha's Outdoor Access Initiative grants are available every year, and their website for that is yamahaoai.com. And there's all the information for organizations that may want to apply to get some of that funding.
Yeah, that's awesome. And even just organizations themselves. Good job, everybody, trying to help us still have access to, you know, riding public land and all that. I know that most places, I'm in New Jersey, basic most riding is illegal here unless somebody owns a track or something. So I'm glad that somebody's fighting for, you know, us to be able to have fun outdoor recreation.
Yeah, I know it's definitely tough for you up in New Jersey. I've heard that before. There's not a lot of opportunity. It's crazy how much opportunity certain states have more than others. But I think that also has a lot to do with the individuals that have maybe advocated for those causes throughout the years and have, you know, tirelessly done that without any recognition, really. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of people getting involved and supporting the sport however you can. And one of those ways is access.
There's plenty of opportunity to ride in New Jersey. You just have to be willing to run from the cops.
Not advisable.
That's all. So this past weekend also, there was round 2 of the MXGP series, which I basically started watching MXGP when Ryan Villopoto retired in the US and went over to Europe to try and contest that series, which if anybody followed, didn't go that well. He actually looped out and then like broke his tailbone or something. But to tie it back into the US this year, Jorge Prado, who is last year's MXGP world champion, came over and rode the first, I think, 4 rounds of Supercross. And he went back to the MXGPs for that series and actually has won the first 2 rounds. So that's interesting. And maybe that'll help get some more US people into watching the, you know, European World Championship.
Yeah, that series is super impressive. I know I write recaps of that series every time it happens for one of my clients. And it's just really cool to see the different terrain that they have to navigate, you know, the caliber of riders that are in that series. And like you said, with Prado coming over here, I mean, it's still a whole different experience versus like Supercross versus MXGP. He had to kind of adapt to that. So to be able to go back and forth is pretty cool.
I did see an interview with Roczen where they asked him, and I don't know if this was, I think it was recently, about Prado going back over to Europe. And he had said that at one point in his career, Ken Roczen, this is, had come to the United States and kind of same situation, rode the first couple of rounds of Supercross. And he said that it really helped him with early race intensity when he went back over to MXGPs. And I do know just from watching the races that they were talking about, this is Prado's best start to a season so far.
Yeah.
I don't think it's probably a coincidence that he just raced a bunch here. And I think the difference is just Supercross being tighter. It's way more intense in the first like lap or two, and you have to get used to that. And I don't think most outdoor series, and I would say probably the Europeans, aren't necessarily as intense on the first lap. So I think maybe that little bit of extra intensity on the first lap is helping him.
Yeah, I think cross-training between disciplines is super valuable.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, it's basically a totally different discipline. So it's cool to see them be able to take some bits of it and translate over into, you know, the outdoor series. We also had Seattle Supercross this past weekend. Levi Kitchen, who actually happens to be a Washington native, He won the lights class, and he seems to be coming into his own this year. He's always been a guy that was like really fast when he was on and then kind of just nowhere to be found when he was off. So it's good to see him kind of just flatten it out and become more consistently the fast guy that we know that he can be. And in the 450 class, we had once again... Oh, no, Jet didn't win. I just about messed it up.
No, I think he got third, right?
So, yeah, he got third. Jet was definitely the fastest there. He made a charge towards the front, fell over, lost a bunch of time, started to catch him again, I think made another mistake, and then was just like, I'm just going to pack it in and take a third. But the ever-present and never-quitting Cooper Webb ended up winning the race. And he, again, is a guy that's never the fastest, but always there. It's like, no matter what you think going into the main, by the end of the main, he's going to be hovering around, you know, like very close to the front, no matter what happens.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we're going to introduce our guest for today's show. He is an ex-Supercross racer and now one of the owners of Canvas MX. Give it up for Michael Lieb. What's up, Michael? How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you guys for having me on.
So yeah, we're just going to get into your background first. Am I correct? You race Supercross. That's actually where I originally heard of you.
Yeah, so I actually turned pro actually in Europe racing the MXGPs. I won Loretta's in 2009 in the 250B stock class. And then we were going to miss Supercross in 2010 and go straight into outdoors. Got a call to go over and ride for the MX2 team for Bud Racing. Spent 2 or 3 years over there racing the MXGPs, which was fun. And then I made my way back here to race West Coast. I think my first year in West Coast was 2012.
Awesome. So had you had Supercross experience, you know, going straight to Europe, there's obviously not really any Supercross over there. So had you had any Supercross experience before you came back and tried to race it?
We actually had we kind of owned a Supercross track while I was on 150s, the Honda 150. And right when I transitioned from that into 125. So I had rode Supercross a bit, never on a 250F really before 2012 when I started training to ride West Coast here. But I kind of always liked that style of riding more than the outdoors, per se. A
little bit technical and not quite as wide open.
I like the jump stuff. I like the technical stuff. It's funny though, because like jumps and technical side of that stuff was never really an issue for me, but I'm short. I'm like 5'4", and my race weight back in the day was 125 to 130 pounds. So whoops were always like the biggest struggle for me, but I always had more fun on Supercross.
How did you get started in motorcycling in general? Like, did you ride as a kid?
Yeah, I think I was off training wheels before my second birthday.
Nice.
So we were all about it from day one. My dad rode. He made it to like the intermediate level, didn't quite make it to the pro level. His parents didn't support him like my parents supported me. So he got into it pretty late, but he'd worked in the industry. My dad worked for Shoei, for Pro Circuit. You know, he's always kind of been embedded in the motocross world. So it was just an obvious transition for us from there.
And you were off training wheels without striders.
Right. No, it's crazy, right? Like, I mean, obviously I'm in the gear space now, but we've been talking like there's this whole demographic now that like has really never been touched. And it really is like the 1.5 year olds to the 3 to 4 year olds. These parents kind of want gear, but there's really nothing that small for them. So it's interesting. But yeah, I mean, you know, you think back in the day, like you were on training wheels, you know, on just regular pedal bikes. Those probably don't even really get used much anymore.
Yeah, we got my fiance's nephew. He turned 5 last year, and we had got him a Strider, I think, when he was 3. And then we, with the help of his dad, got him a Stasic last year. And then for Christmas, he got like dirt bike gear and a helmet and gloves. And that was like the coolest thing ever to him. But I feel a little bit guilty because he's 5 going around telling everybody that he has a dirt bike and really it's a Stasic. So I'm like, how long do we let this go on before he realizes it's not actually a dirt bike?
Until he runs into a kid that has a dirt bike.
Yeah, he lives in the city too, up in Wisconsin. So he's probably not going to be able to have a dirt bike anywhere around where he lives. But
there's no need to dash his hopes and dreams. I just let it ride.
Yeah, but the jersey we got him, he, going back to your point, like he was pretty much swimming in it. It's like a dress on him at this point.
So are you guys going to start tackling little kids' gear?
I mean, it's always on the radar. It's hard to not do something like that, especially the way that our business model works. We don't really carry inventory for anything. So a made-to-order process on that would be quite easy to implement into our system. Just a matter of getting the templates and the fit right, which the kids' stuff, like, it's so all over the place. Sorry, I'm getting off the beaten path, but I do that pretty easily.
Just brainstorming business ideas on this call. So how did you get into designing riding gear? Like, what made you say, yeah, that's the thing that I want to do? What was the need?
I'm not a designer by any means. So when I was little, like I used to draw like painted helmet stuff. I was always like super fascinated with that side of it. But going to your question, we throughout Supercross in 2012, we kind of did a run program for the 2012, 2013, and 2014. And then leading it into 2015, in 2014, I was paid pretty well for Maxo. And then the next year, they pretty much cut my pay by like 95%. And that night I was at home watching NASCAR in the backyard with my dad. And you don't see, you know, the NASCAR drivers jumping out of their car and, you know, the gear company like Simpson or Alpine Star, for example. So the idea came from, you know, what if we just crowdfunded and did like title sponsorship stuff on just get all white gear and put heat transfers of local companies to Dallas, Texas or Phoenix, Arizona, or, you know, New Jersey for MetLife Stadium and try to give those people a way to use some marketing dollars that would help offset the cost for us to build sponsorship. Worked really well. We raised like 30 or 40 grand within 3 weeks. And on the fourth weekend in Oakland, I snapped both legs. So I was hurt pretty bad. And then from that point, the white gear that I was wearing got a lot of attraction from a lot of people just saying, oh, I want all white gear, like no logos, no branding. There was nothing on it. I got contacted from a company in Argentina called Radical, and they kind of came to me and were like, hey, you know, we can make you all white and all black gear. And that's literally how Canvas was born, which is just, it's funny to look back on for sure.
I actually rode for Radical. I had Radical gear back in the
day. Did you really?
And I had sublimation printed jerseys, and I was talking crap to Ronnie Renner because he's like Fox guy. And it's all, yeah. I was like, oh, look at your jersey with your heat presses on it. And I'm like, I got my stuff in my jersey. And also, side note, your whole premise of getting title sponsors for individual rounds seems to have almost become like commonplace now. Like, you guys opened the door and made people realize that it was possible, but they're, you know, like Car Now, although some of them are, you know what I mean, girls on sites or whatever, but it's still the same premise of sponsors pertaining to a certain city.
I still think that it's not even been tapped into to the level that it can be. We are working, so like HBI, so the team that Time Masterpool and a couple of the other guys are on, Kawasaki's, they're starting to tap into a market there that is getting to be pretty exciting. Title sponsorship gear for me, I think, is really unique because we can essentially make different gear per each weekend based on a title sponsorship. So instead of Canvas, let's say, going to a team and saying, hey, you know, we're going to give you guys 100 grand. And in turn, right, Canvas is probably 3-4% the size of a Thor, a Fox, an Answer, a well-known gear brand. They're using more or less their marketing dollars to go do that. That's expenses that they more or less have to incur to a certain extent, right? At a certain point, obviously they're digging into their pockets for branding opportunity and growing the brand. But for us to go compete with that and say, you know, throw out 100 grand to a team or two, that's detrimental to us as far as cash flow goes. So allowing these teams to utilize our platform to be able to make custom gear per a title sponsorship. You know, like, let's just, like, let's dream big here. Let's go ahead and say FedEx. Let's say FedEx has a reason to get involved with Moto or whatever it is, and they want to just try it out. They want to go spend 10 grand for a round. They're going to bring all their employees or coworkers, whoever, managers, whoever it's going to be. They're going to bring those people out. They're going to be more part of that team. They'll get treated like royalty for that weekend. They're not committed to a whole year. It's a way to break up the dollars that need to be brought in for these teams on a per race weekend rather than a whole year.
And I would imagine for the sponsors, it's much more appetizing to be like, let me get my feet wet for one round for a fraction of the price versus right. being like, I'm going to commit to the whole year for, like you said, $100,000 or something.
Exactly. You've got a way to incrementally increase what that is. HBI, they had a couple gear offers from other gear companies. They've already exceeded both of their offers by doing just sponsorship stuff. And we're barely halfway through Supercross. We still have Outdoors and SMX to go through. And the momentum that they're building, that could really build into something amazing for that team in 2025 and beyond, to be able to use a platform that no one else really has fully grasped. I think that, like you said, the idea is now there. It's working in certain aspects, but I imagine, I mean, I don't know how much you follow IndyCar, but IndyCar changes their entire car theme and their pit suit team almost on a per weekend basis. They try to do it in 2 to 3s, but that's the idea, right? Is to, how can we help some of these smaller teams crowdfund, grow, use different resources, bring more money into our industry that we all obviously love.
And it's cool for the fans each weekend to see people in different gear, you know, different graphics on their bikes and stuff. Like, it changes things up. Makes things interesting.
100%. And then you're attracting bigger companies in. Our sports starting to look bigger, you know, our sport starts to grow. You know, you're not going to really go to an Amazon and probably get $500,000 or $1 million out of them for a year long sponsorship. But what if you gave them something to tease them with and build into? You might open some doors that way.
Well, and it at least opens the eyes of some people at the companies where they're like, oh, this is actually a viable sport that we can get involved with. And we do see a return on our investment, where I think that's, like you said, our sport really needs outside dollars. And whatever the reason, it hasn't necessarily happened that way. But I think this would definitely be opening some doors and making people go, oh, you know, this is a sport that we can get involved with.
100%.
And it sounds like Canvas is really making people think differently. It's not about just like, how does the gear feel that you're wearing? I'm sure that's a piece of it. But like, what can that gear do for you, for your marketing, for your branding, for like your income as a racer?
Exactly. And then, you know, you've got your other demographic of people that just want something different. And then you've got your other demographic where, like, we sublimate every single custom order that we do. There's factory riders that still don't get sublimated jerseys.
Can you explain that process a little bit for people that may not be familiar?
100%. So sublimation is dyeing the ink directly into the fabric rather than putting a heat transfer on. So like heat transfers, number one, they don't breathe well. They feel like cardboard. They're pretty sticky. But when you put them in the wash and dryer, they fade and they start to peel. When you sublimate, like when you go buy a Fox jersey, for example, and their Fox logo is in the material, we're doing that with everything that you customize on our jersey, whether that be logos added, design added, color added, name and number added, text, whatever you put on there, on the pants and the jersey, it's all dye sublimated. Doesn't come out.
Nice.
And you look sick.
Yeah, the only way that we do that is I built our own manufacturing facility about a year and a half ago, but we make everything from scratch. So you start on the printer, you press the paper into the material, we hand cut, we hand sew every order. That's why our turnaround time is about 4 to 5 weeks.
Yeah.
But it's made with love.
You're talking about people wanting white gear too. And from a, I guess, you know, I'm more familiar with off-road stuff and mud. From a mud perspective, I can't imagine wanting white gear. I mean, it looks cool and it's clean, but man, to clean that stuff, that's rough.
Off-road, you just get brown.
And that's the other thing. Like, we can make any solid colorway set of gear and you can customize, you know, any aspect of it. It literally, we have a 3D design tool online, and people, it's funny because people will come to us and we'll be like, well, how do I make a set of gear all brown? Well, you just go to the website and you click apply all on that color and there you go.
Well, I do know that originally the pants were just a certain colorway, and now right. recently you guys have gotten to a point where, like you said, you can totally customize the pants as well.
In 2015, when it first started, for the first 2 years, we were importing Radical pants from Argentina, and they were solid white, solid black. And And then a year or two after that, we implemented, like, we had solid red and solid blue. I think we even had some yellow. And then logistically, business from Argentina to USA on custom stuff, it was too much time. The customs was a nightmare. At that point, it was, well, how do we figure out how to make it in USA? And I spent the better part of 4.5 to 5 years trying to outsource our stuff here. The jerseys weren't as difficult, but finding the right people to make a motocross pant, it's been a very, very long challenge. We've gone through a few different vendors to figure it out. And then I finally just decided, well, if I want to be serious about this, we just need to do this ourselves.
What is like the wildest design that you've seen come through with people designing their stuff? Like they design it, it goes through the order process, it gets pulled up on the computer and you're like, what is this? Like, what's the craziest thing?
We have a guy that ordered, it was like back in 2018, it was right when we started our 3D design tool online. He uploaded his cat 203 times. Onto his jersey. And it was just like, it was like cat camouflage. It was terrible.
Cat camouflage. It was terrible. Oh my gosh.
I feel like Thor copied that.
I feel like Mustang needs one of those, right? Disney a big cat.
Exactly.
But no, we've seen that. I mean, the whole point, like we have three different series that we have online. We have our custom series, which you start from scratch. You have our mod series, which you can take any of those kits and delete our logo off, add your own, change all your colorway. You can customize it fully however you want it. It just gives you a start point. And then we have our label series. And we implemented our label series because I was kind of, as far as like a brand goes, right? If that guy goes out to the track and he's got his cat 203 times on his jersey and someone asks where it's from and they say Canvas, they're going to be like, who the heck are these people, you know? But we offered our label series, and that was like essentially what we give our factory elite riders. We give the same font, the same number font. Everything is identical. We match all the logos. We give them like the proper logo placement, what we would do for any of our pro guys. And we do that for the general public. But they can't customize the colorway once, you know, we'll have like, say, 10 colorways online. You pick one of them, and then we factory place everything for you by hand, rather than you creating what you want. Now, the whole idea on that was so that we can start to build the brand and the gear to look the way that we want it to, as far as, you know, what we like.
Well, and it being professional, like you said, versus just letting everybody go willy-nilly and then they're like, what is this? I haven't ridden yet. This is how long I haven't ridden in. But I actually got the Redbud gear last year, and it's still brand new. I tried it on once, and that's it. I haven't ridden since then. But I'm excited to go ride because I'm going to look sick.
Yeah. Be dialed in.
Michael, is there anything that you want people to know about your brand or about you as a person?
Just that we're super sick and we're the best out there, and that's it. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm totally... No, I mean, for people that don't know Canvas, we're 100% made in USA. We're custom made to order. We offer wholesale stuff for people that want to essentially kind of have like their own branded stuff to resell. We do a lot of club jerseys. So if there's a lot of motorcycle clubs out there, we offer like a private store page that we can upload their club jersey online for. We do a lot of stuff. So if anyone out there that's listening to this, that's in the business, or looking to be in the business of making, you know, motocross pants and jerseys, we're making a lot of stuff right here in Southern California, and we're one of the only ones doing it. So trying to pave a little bit of a new path.
That's a really good point to bring up. I work with a lot of event organizers in my business, and I know some of the clubs were ordering jerseys for themselves, but also some events are starting to sell jerseys as an apparel option for like riders and racers that come to the event. Instead of getting an event t-shirt, they can order a jersey. So that's a super cool concept to have, like you said, here in the USA too.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that use us for that. We also do like custom polos and custom jackets and team wear for a lot of the race teams as well. So even if it's not necessarily just a jersey, pit shirts and jackets and stuff like that, we do a lot of as well, which we're building out that side of the website right now.
So where can people connect with you online?
You can go straight to our website. That's canvasmx.com. Our direct email is on there. You can just hit up the contact page. That goes to just a few of us that handle that. We oversee pretty much everything that comes through. Our Instagram is canvas_MX. And yeah. Feel free to check us out. And if you got any questions, we're here for it.
And I want to confirm that you guys are sweet because you were raced MXGP and Supercross, and your partner invented the friggin' body varial, which is how I even know. I know Chuck well. So that's how this all even happened. But it is actually Moto people doing this.
Yeah, that's another really important point for sure.
Yeah, you're supporting people that, you know, love the sport, are doing this because, you know, that's was their lives growing up. And I think as a community, you know, that's important for us to realize that, you know, you guys are one of us. It's not just random people with a lot of money trying to make gear.
100%. I mean, Chuck, obviously, you know, he's had a really, really awesome career on two wheels. You know, we're not corporate. There's some good and some bad that comes with that. We're just learning and failing along the way and building what we're, you know, what you essentially see today. It's been a very big learning challenge to come out of for me racing. And I'm sure for Chuck, you know, he kind of had a little bit of a head start with some other business opportunities that he ventured into since he's about 10 years older than me. We love the industry. We do want to create something different. We're definitely not a traditional gear brand. We're trying to definitely do things against the grain and a lot differently than others.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, Mike. And yeah, everybody check out canvasmx.com. Put your cat, your dog, whatever you got, a snake or lizard, whatever you want, you can put it on your jersey.
Awesome, guys. Thank you so much for having me on.
If you enjoyed this episode, follow Pit Pass Moto wherever you get podcasts so you never miss an episode. You can also follow us on social media or visit pitpassmotorsports.com. There you will find our complete episode archive and other exclusive content. This has been a production of Evergreen Podcast. A special thanks to today's producer and engineer, Gray Longfellow, and our executive producer, Gerardo Orlando. I'm Clint Esposito.
And I'm Heather Wilson.
And we hope you'll join us next time for another episode of Pit Pass Moto.
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.